The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Roundtable of Sports City. I am your host, TP Timeless, holding it down for the Sports City Chefs this Friday evening. Y'all could have been anywhere else in the world, but you're here with the chefs. Adam took off his blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped aside the kitchen. Timeless is alive. May 10th. Let's kick it off. Let's go.
You take y'all somewhere else right now.
A nigga got zone out with me, man. Right, got zone out.
I'm at the center. Zone out.
Oh, shit.
Number is 917-889-9592. Like I said, you got the next 60 minutes locked and loaded with your boy. And I'm trying to kick these topics off as quickly as possible. I know a lot of people want to run out and catch some more of this sunshine before the sun goes down. Nice day out here in the tri-state area. I see it in the high 60s, low 70s. Sun is out. Everybody's enjoying it. So, unfortunately, me, I'm fighting off allergies, so I don't want to sit out there and be in front of all of that pollen. But I got work to do in this kitchen. A lot of topics to throw around. Again, the call number is 917-889-9592. Get in here if you want to jump on the round table. Got a couple of topics that pique some interest. Now, first and foremost, I don't want to initially go to the topic that's close to me. I kind of want to leave that for the meat and potatoes. If people walk into this kitchen, I want to see how people feel about the topic. But the first topic that I have is actually a stunner with the Zach Greinke actually coming back for the Los Angeles Dodgers after him, and Carlos Clinton had the melee after a beam ball was thrown at him, and he basically rushed the pitcher and, you know, injured his collarbone area, if you will. He's actually set to be back as of today. So I think he definitely did all he can to rehab and get back out there to give this Los Angeles Dodgers team a lift, and they sure do need it right now. Just playing some up and down baseball, and I don't see the strength of these guys scoring runs, but their pitching staff is what's going to hold them together. If they can just get some support out of the batters or the people that come to play, I think they could go. They could make some way in the NL West. I don't know if they could automatically win it, but with him coming back, if he can come back and play some decent ball, also with Kershaw as well, I think they have a little good core right now to make some things happen, but they still have to compete with the likes of the Giants and the Diamondbacks. And I don't know if the Rockies make this interesting. I question that. And the Padres, I won't even talk about it. I definitely had to get that out there. I didn't think Ricky would be back this soon. They were saying it was supposed to be a 6 to 8 week situation. He's back before that. I give him a lot of credit on the fighting that he did to get back out on the field after having a fight. Now, let's get into the game of tonight, where the Miami Heat take their talents to the Windy City. And so many storylines with Joakim Noah getting thrown obscene gestures by the crowd. You got Taj Gibson going at it with the referee, and he gets fined for going at the ref. It was a total of 9 technical fouls in the game with 2 ejections. I mean, what else could you draw up? I was actually saying on another show that this is initially turning into a new rivalry. I mean, before when Michael Jordan was around going up against the Miami Heat, there was a situation where Mike dominated the Heat, but it always was an interesting game with the likes of Ronnie Spike and company. just trying to fight to the best of their ability going up against Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan and never could succeed. Now you got a situation where it's Dwayne Wade and LeBron James kind of being the Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen team. I'm not saying that these guys are those guys, but trying to throw comparison at the two guard and the three position at the small forward with both of these guys, you know, manning those positions going up against Chicago. Chicago's actually under the wing, but Chicago came out game one and was successful in taking a game away from these guys on the road, where they basically have to hold serve and win these next two games being at home. I find it a hard situation for these guys to do at the end of the day. It's going to be tough for them to play a team like the Miami Heat, whether it's on the road or at home. But the Heat are going to take this game pretty much serious because they don't want to be in a 3-1 situation trying to go back into Miami and, you know, win a game five and come back to Chicago game six and win a game. So this game has a lot of interesting storylines. If these bigs could play as big as they are right now, and that being Boozer and Thoba and Taj coming in off the bench, if these guys could keep their hand in the game and get possessions by rebounding the ball and making tough shots for the big that may come in the game for the Miami Heat, I think it's more or less going to be on the shoulders of Dwayne Wade and LeBron to win these games. And not to say that's a hard thing, because these guys definitely have the knack and the ability to score the ball and can take over games because they've been in these situations before, but I would think they would want to more or less play team ball. And there's actually been statements that have actually been said that if you actually defend the perimeter, that's a way to force these guys to drive and make them make difficult shots on the run. I wouldn't want Dwayne Wade or LeBron having that access to the paint, but everybody else, like a Mike Miller, whether it's Shane Battier, Ray Allen, even Norris Cole and Mario Chalmers, I think it's best if these guys all, you know, get in their stomach more or less and kind of make these guys dribble penetrate and hopefully they take the shot and not kick to a wide open person out there on the perimeter, because this will actually help the Bulls at the end of the day because they play consistent defense. That's why I give Thibodeau a lot of credit. No matter what situation is going on in Chicago, these guys always have a fighter's chance because of the defense that these guys possess and just kind of staying well-grounded and not being, you know, more or less, you know, demoralized by a guy like LeBron coming in there possibly dunking on somebody or Dwayne Wade coming in there dunking on somebody. They're going to continue to play these guys tough and make it a physical series. And there was something that I stated before, that Miami is in for a physical series all series long. I don't think there's a situation where these guys are going to walk by any means. They're going to have to earn every single game. Even though they blew the Bulls out that last game, I think that was more or less of a situation where the Heat had their back on the wall. They didn't want to go into their next game being down 0-2 because that's you know, a formidable situation trying to at least steal the next two games of Chicago. All Chicago would really have to do is win one game and just, you know, hope that they can nail another one. But that's neither here nor there. I still favor the Heat in this series just because of all of the injuries that are going on in the Chicago Bulls roster. Now, speaking of the injuries, the three guys that are noted as of Luol Deng, his final tap situation is still his problem. Kirk Heinrich is still injured as well. And the guy that actually, you know, made the most raucous or the most news out of a recent situation was Derrick Rose. And Derrick Rose is actually out there stating that he will be suiting up for game three. Now there's a statement that comes out that says he will not suit up. He will not be able to give it a go for the Chicago Bulls. And it's not like it's a surprising situation that the Bulls have been fighting for the most part without this guy all season long, where this is actually going into the 13th month after his injury. I would expect that this guy could actually go out there and give him some minutes. But I don't want to be like the rest of everybody calling Derrick Rose out and saying he should be ashamed of himself and what else does it need for him to go out there. Nate Robinson should inspire him. Hey, look, this guy just signed a monster contract. He is basically the face of Chicago. I don't like to say it like this, but deal with it. Until he is officially ready within his mind, that's the only thing that it takes. Is, you know, doctors can clear him. He can go out there and practice and look good in practice. Until he feels like he can literally be NBA speed and give it a go up against LeBron James and Dwayne Wade and company, he has to take his time on getting out there. I respect the situation on not wanting to go out there and risking, you know, being injured again and being out for a great duration of time. So I feel like you guys, I feel like y'all, I'd rather see him out there to go into one of the more compelling series at the end of the day. But it's a situation where you don't want him to go out there and give it 150% and end up re-popping the situation in his knee. You know, just one jump step in the lane, and he popped his knee last year up against the Philadelphia 76ers. Now, the one thing that I'm hoping for is, who is going to be the guy that steps up for the Chicago Bulls with all of the absentee guys in this situation? Now, you got the likes of Kirk Heinrich, another guard that they need in this situation outside of Nate Robinson. They've been going with Teague as of the most part. I don't think Teague is the guy that I want there out there on the floor. You got Luol Deng. I thought he would have definitely been a good defensive guy to have out there to try and deal with LeBron. I don't think he would have shut LeBron down. But the situation where you got to hope that he could come in there and keep LeBron to a minimal or as much as possible. But, you know, all three of these guys that were noted before being D-Rose, Heinrich, and Luol, I mean, these are extreme pieces at the end of the day. And I would want to see these guys go up against the Chicago Bulls, but unfortunately, these guys are not ready to give it a go. But we will see how far this goes in tonight's game. They're set to do battle within the next coming minutes. So everybody buckle up, because you know this series is going to get crazy. And they're in Chicago now. They're not in Miami. No place like home. Now, the next situation I have is kind of close to me, being the former team that I used to like in the NBA, the Seattle Supersonics, which are now the Oklahoma City Thunder. No. Of course, they are the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Sonics are trying to get their team back up there. Not Oklahoma City. They're still fighting to get the Sacramento Kings. And unfortunately, David Stern put away the situation and saying that he's giving the opportunity back to Sacramento, but Seattle has raised, buckle up for this one, a total of $625 million to get the Kings to come to Seattle. If these guys are not fighting for an NBA team to get to Seattle, I don't know what that is, but they basically got this money raised to get the team back there, and I don't know which way the Maloof brothers may weigh or sway in this situation, if they end up selling the team to the group that's out there in Seattle, or if it's a no situation where they basically get shunned out by David Stern and let the things keep rolling out there in Sacramento. Now, the statement that David Stern had made previously was, we have to kind of go to bat for the city of Sacramento, who supported us through so many years and keeping a nice team there up until, I want to say, the last 4 years where they haven't really had any star power there. But we'll see how this all pans out. But that's an enormous number that they throw out there, and I don't think Sacramento is raised nowhere near that type of money to try and keep the Kings at Sacramento. So I'm gonna wait for the next couple of days to see how this does end up panning out. But unfortunately, I think Sacramento could possibly end up losing the Kings with the money that Seattle is throwing out to try and get a team back into the city where they used to see the likes of, you know, Sean Kemp, Gary Payton, Ratliff, Ricky Pierce, Nate McMillan, all of the notable names that I grew up with, David McDaniel, even though I didn't like the X-Man when he was in New York, I did love when he wore green and gold, but I want to see how this does end up panning out. Moving on to back to the East Coast of things, we have the New York Knicks in their situation where Amari Stoudemire is back for Game 3 up against the Indiana Pacers now. The crazy thing in this situation is Amari has not played ball in quite some time, and he's been coming off the bench all season long. Now, this guy has starter capability. He's getting starter money. And last year in this situation where he was in the playoffs, he injured himself hitting a glass door fire extinguisher situation, and every Knicks fan knows what I'm talking about. He wasn't able to give it a go at the end of the day for the New York Knicks, but I want to see if he's going to be efficient enough to give these guys 10 points, possibly a double-double. He definitely has a lift to get off the floor, while I'm hoping that he does. Haven't seen him play in quite some time, but he could definitely go out there and get 5 buckets, get 7 to 10 rebounds. I don't want to really push him to say to get 10 rebounds initially because he's coming back off an injury and been sitting down for quite some time. But he has to get his legs underneath him and get back to game speed. There's a lot of things before things start to pan out that way. But I am looking at him staying healthy, being another big, because they just did actually get Camby back as well. And they've actually been playing some comfortable basketball, especially knocking off the Pacers by 20-plus points in game two in the Garden. So with that being said, this is going to be a crazy situation. This rivalry is back restored, you know, back to the Reggie Miller, Spike Lee days, you know, Patrick Ewing with the layup. Now you got Carmelo Anthony and Paul George. I mean, two notable stars, both teams. Both of them are all-stars. I think this is anybody's game right here, game three. Split series being on Indiana's floor. I'm more or less looking forward to the Pacers fans to kind of get in the game and kind of make things tough for New York and kind of keep them on edge. Speaking of New York and having things on edge, Coach Woodson actually said he's going to cut time from J.R. Smith, saying that J.R. Smith actually is going to have his time reduced due to the fact that he's actually been missing shots in the past couple of games. Now, I don't fully agree with this. J.R. Smith has actually been an available weapon for the New York Knicks team, and outside of Carmelo, I think he's another one of the scoring powers. I mean, if you want to throw Raymond Felton in this situation, okay, so be it, but I don't think his scoring capability equals what J.R. Smith can do. And they always say, if a shooter's having a tough time, tell him to keep shooting. I think you don't diminish what he can do, especially with him already being a player coming off the bench. If you're going to cut his time, I mean, somebody else is going to have to step up, whether Jason Kidd is knocking down shots and Steve Novak is knocking down shots. I mean, everybody within this New York Knicks roster is definitely going to have to step up one way or another, because the one thing about the Pacers team that they need to worry about is there's no one guy that's going to literally come out there and give you 27 that you have to worry about. They'll beat you with five players on the floor or using their bench as well. Their bench is pretty deep as well. So they play team basketball. It's been working for them. They stole a game in the Garden. The Knicks have to get a game in Indiana. If not, I mean, this could spell doom for them as early as game six. Now, I wanted to save this. I can't because I don't have the people that I wanted to get into the kitchen. So I have to throw this one around out. Let me take a sip of this drink. Hold on. Okay, the situation that we have here is so close to me that I don't even know how to respond to this. Nick Fairley comes out and makes a statement. He is predicting the Detroit Lions. That's right, you guys know I'm a diehard. I've seen this and said, wow. Like, why put us out there on a limb? And it's every situation, let me put it this way, every 5 or 10 years, something like this always comes up with the Detroit Lions. I can remember as far back as John Kitna and Roy Williams coming out there saying, oh, we're going to go 10-6, we're going to go 11-5, we're going to be a playoff team. I think Nick Fairley just trumped that. Now, mind you, he's a talent. I love and respect this guy's ability. He's a DT. Got caught up in illegal situations 2 years ago, but now this is a situation where he could actually redeem himself and puts out a statement that says, the Lions are going to the Super Bowl. I love my team. I'm not with them on that. Like I think there's going to be a team that could actually be a thorn in our side. I'm still worried about if they can beat Green Bay at least one time in the season, let alone trying to sweep the series. I mean, they have the ability to make it tough on Minnesota, but they got to slow down Adrian Peterson. And the way Adrian Peterson took care of business last year, I question that. The Chicago Bears, they are putting pieces together to their wide receiver core. So I question that because our secondary has actually been poor. So we have to get out of our own division before statements like that are being made. Nick, I understand the reason why you said it. You say that you have a competitive nature. So kind of putting that goal on the list for this season is something to aim for. But if you come up short, I mean, people aren't even going to worry about it because they want to see you do more in a full NFL season, including myself. I want to see you give it more than 9 games in a season, even though you're still trying to recover from the situations that occurred previously. You have to be there for a full season. Don't sit out. You and Adama Gassou have to kind of put all that nasty-minded bad guy images by the wayside and come out and play some go-to football at the end of the day. And I'm actually looking forward to them putting some pieces around Calvin, man, at least get another receiver or two. Like, everybody's thinking that the fact that they got Glover Quinn in there to be a part of the defensive secondary, he's a safety, not a corner. The cornerbacks are the issue at the end of the day for the Detroit Lions. I mean, Quinn could be on a couple of plays, but he can't be everywhere. And the signing of Ezekiel Ansah, actually, a.k.a. Ziggy, who is a freak of nature to me. And, you know, a lot of people question the pickup. I think that if him and Dominique Sue and Nick Fairley get it together, they can have an interesting season up front of it. As long as these guys stay together as a cohesive unit and can make some plays happen, they get to the quarterback, they can win a lot of games if these guys do it together. But these guys can no longer be individuals. And Sue, I'm calling you out, especially because every time you make a play, it's basically all about you and not being a full team player. That's what I'm looking at right now. And, you know, offensively, like, I don't know how many things they want Reggie Bush to do at the end of the day. Like, I respect what Reggie can do. You know, I love the fact that now we got a piece to the return game, which that hasn't been there for the past, wow, I want to say the past 7 or 8 years. As far back as I can think is when Drummond was around for the Detroit Lions. Now you have Reggie Bush where they said they want to make him a every down back when they don't have to. They have a staple of running backs with Drake Bell and also with Mekhi Lashor. They shouldn't have to put that much pressure on Reggie Bush to make plays happen. Have him kind of be the specialty guy that he's always been when he was with the Saints. Also with Miami, you can use him to that same dynamic out here in Detroit underneath of what Calvin Johnson can create, because if that's going on, Calvin's drawing double or triple team, ready to consider underneath that and pick up 7 or 8 yards of play, two of those are first downs. I'll take it. I'm not going to be too spoiled by saying that, oh, I want big play situations. I just want somebody to just draw attention away from Calvin and make things, some things happen. And also, if Brandon Pettigrew could show up big within his offense, I mean, for him to lead the team in drops and have so many different open targets, I can understand him being targeted and the ball be thrown to him and it be batted away or broken up. He'll be by himself in the middle of the field or in the flat and drop balls or fumbles and cost the team a possession. The spotlight is on you guys right now. You guys have a lot of interesting pieces right now, and unfortunately, you guys definitely have to step up and play better football. But I'm out there wondering, why won't they go after a guy like Moss? Now, there's a lot of people out there saying, Ty, what are you thinking? There's no need to go after Randy Moss at the end of the day. I'm like, listen, Randy has been through so many different situations of playing championship football, and not to say that he's the Randy of old. He's not. But he definitely could mentor a guy like Calvin Johnson to go out there and play some big play football. So if Calvin could actually have a guy on the outside that could do that, Reggie Bush underneath this madness, and whatever tight end they may go with, whether it be Williams, Pettigrew, or if they do end up having Scheffler a part of the roster too, there's a lot of interesting pieces on the offensive side of the ball. And also, the key to everything is Stafford has to stay healthy and upright. So that offensive line knows how much pressure is on them at the end of the day to make some things happen for his offense to not only just be out there on the field and move chains, but put points up on the board and not field goals, because you see how many field goals David Eagles missed last year. We don't have the comfort of Jason Hansen. Well, Jason Hansen missed some field goals as well, but I think Jason Hansen was a little more efficient than what David Eagles did last year. But David Eagles has a leg. Hopefully he can redeem himself. He got to a Super Bowl last year, came up short. This can be a situation where he could actually, you know, get a fresh start with a young team and kind of, you know, put some emotion behind the team and see how far I can go. But like I said, the statement that stirred all this stuff up with me looking at the Detroit Lions, and I'm a diehard, like I said, I love my team, but for Fairley to come out with a statement, it says that he thinks that this team is going to the Super Bowl as of 2013-2014. I actually wrote this one down as wow. I didn't say anything else. I basically freestyled this one and just said wow. I don't know how far Detroit could go, especially having a season last year. They're on an 11-game losing streak and counting right now. They lost 11 straight last year. I don't know. I just don't know, man. Having that type of season, that defense, and not just you guys in the front seven. That secondary has to do a lot of work, and Stafford, that interception total has to drop, and you definitely have to make the best plays possible for these guys to be able to compete with the likes of an Aaron Rodgers or, you know, all of the tougher quarterbacks within the NFC. And that's what we're looking at, to try and dominate the entire NFC to get to the Super Bowl. That's what it's going to take. The call number is 917-889-9592. We got the next 35 minutes left into the show. I'm trying to get enough of these topics out of the way so we can all enjoy this glorious May 10th Friday evening. Now, unfortunately, there's a situation that's going on out here in the tri-state area, and that is with Geno Smith. Now, Geno Smith has actually been, his name has been a part of, how do I say it, like the NFL's talk amongst all of the rookies that have been drafted, should have drafted them. What is the situation going on out there with Tim Tebow? Did Tim Tebow come back? They have six quarterbacks. They only have one or two running backs. They're not trying to sign enough running backs back there. Who knows? But Geno Smith has actually come out and actually went through camp and made some throws happen. And he's more or less not even feeding into people talking about him. He basically manned up and said that he's going to deal with, you know, taking his job over, going to fight for that number one position to run the show in New York. And I'm really wondering who ends up being the quarterback for the New York Jets. To be honest, I think it should be. This is me. I think it should be between Smith, Sanchez. I'm going to put Sanchez in there. I'll put Sanchez in there. And McElroy. That's how I look at it. David Garrard, I understand you're a mobile quarterback and you've made some things happen in your career. I think you should be more or less a mentor guy, being on that sideline, holding the clipboard and telling these guys what to do. I think you'd be successful at that. If one of these guys goes down, I think you'd be probably the guy that could step in and make some backup quarterback things that, you know, in that situation happen. But I'm not comfortable at the end of the day with Garrard running the show, especially, you know, in his mid-30s, picking up a new playbook. I think that's a tough situation for him to try and come and run a Jets team that doesn't have any real weapons on the outside for him to go to. Now, speaking on, you know, Geno Smith and how he's basically been looking at himself, he's actually saying that he's actually looking down toward himself and he doesn't, you know, give himself a high grade. He's actually been throwing himself as an F on grading him, you know, in his experience toward the NFL game and how many things he needs to pick up. But I think that all comes within due time. I think he's being very critical toward himself. He has to definitely get the feel of the team and worry about how the coaches want him. But that shows hunger. I really think that shows hunger at the end of the day to see how hard or how far he can go with the New York Jets team. And if he can't give it a full go, then he's already going to be beat at the starting gate. But I would anticipate for this guy to have a better season than what Mark Sanchez has done, especially in the last season with so many questionable situations, turnovers, and being of value to the team. A lot of people really feed into what Rex Ryan is seeing. I think Rex Ryan sees the more experienced quarterback at the end of the day, but now you have a quarterback in Geno who's not scared to make those throws, who can be mobile. I'm not going to call him a mobile quarterback. He can be mobile. I think he's going to try and prove himself to be in the pocket. And this is going to be an interesting quarterback race at the end of the day to see who actually ends up manning the ship for the New York Jets. But like I said, I think it should be either between McElroy, Geno, or Sanchez. I wonder what the other quarterbacks are going to try to do or if they actually end up releasing some of these guys to create some space. Who knows? But with Geno Smith and his situation and Tebow Smith being pushed out of the organization and how the Jacksonville Jaguars said they don't want anything to do with this guy, it's pretty much interesting. I do want to see how this does end up panning out for Tebow and what team does go after him. They're saying the CFL doesn't even want him, so I'm actually shaking my head at that as well. We are going to take a little commercial break. We will be right back after these messages. Okay, the call-in number is 917-889-9592. You got the next 30 minutes locked and loaded to get through the remainder of the roundtable. Now, I'm throwing topics out here because I wanted to save these topics for my people that were going to come in the kitchen. They told me they would be here. Unfortunately, I've been rocking without these guys. So I'm going to try and get to some of the other topics, try to save it for them for the remainder of the show. Hopefully, these guys don't come at the tail end of the show and have me try to throw these debates around, if you will. I'm trying my best to save them, but I can't. But one topic that I have is Mike Tyson has gone from boxer, making it into the Boxing Hall of Fame, going through a financial situation, to becoming an act on Broadway. Now there's a situation of this guy actually creating a cartoon. Now he's actually going to set out to be a detective, and I think Mike Tyson has been through every situation, you know, possible in his boxing career or post-boxing career, however we may draw up the situation. I think more or less, to me, this is a desperate situation of him trying to get some money. I don't like this, but whatever you need to do, Mike, to try and get some income, do it. But if to me, it feels like you're a tiger jumping through hoops, you know, ignited with flames. Like, you're doing anything at the end of the day. I don't like this at all. But, Mike, I can't knock your hustle. I really can't. Now, despite Mike Tyson and his situation in the boxing world, we have the likes of Klitschko pulling off a win. We also have the Mayweather situation where he went up against Guerrero. I have some people that actually have come to me and actually thrown in the Sports City Chef email that they would like to see him go up against Canelo. I actually would like to see that happen. They are actually saying that they are actually having negotiations and talks about this fight going down. I think this fight would definitely be a blockbuster fight. Both of these guys go into the fight being undefeated fighters. Floyd actually said after the fight up against Guerrero, he basically wants to have some time with his family before he throws a decision out and goes up against a Canelo Alvarez. I think this is a trouble fight for Floyd, man, because this guy is another hard hitter. He fights at 154, I think he would have to chase Floyd. So I think he would have to lose the 7 pounds to fight Floyd. Either way, I think he still, you know, could cause a problem for Floyd going into this fight, especially with a significant unanimous decision over Austin Trout less than a month ago, down in San Antonio. But I like the chances for Floyd because Floyd knows how to get away from some hard hitters. But then again, he hasn't seen a hard hitter that actually can move with the quickness of Alvarez as well, too. I mean, I thought the same thing about Guerrero, but, you know, Guerrero just was a little too slow for Floyd. At the end of the day, I thought Floyd would get caught by some of those punches. Just the way that, you know, the Ghost was in his training camp and looked very effective at the end of the day. He wasn't getting to Floyd. Floyd made him miss severely several different occasions in the fight. And I don't think that'll be that same type of fight if he goes up against Canelo. If Canelo could cut the ring off and get Floyd in a situation where Floyd wants to be up against the ropes or in the corners and fight his way out, which Floyd likes to show people that he can stay in the pocket and fight with any of these guys. Well, a lot of people say it's boring to watch Floyd fight. I actually like it because he does well with his defense, even when he's in a pressure situation where you think the puncher, because I don't really want to call a lot of these guys the boxer in a situation, because Floyd actually is more of the boxer when they go up against each other. That they have a puncher chance by just catching Floyd with a knockout shot, keeping him in close quarters. And Floyd actually is successful in deflecting shots and throwing his own at the same stint while he's in, you know, against the ropes or up in the corner, and kind of making the people that are going up against him look questionable being in the ring with Floyd. So Canelo, I think it's a little too premature for me to start talking about the situation, but they're saying that talks are underway about the match going down. If it does go down, of course my heart is with Floyd, but I don't like to see this guy go up against these heavy hitters, man, and especially a younger heavy hitter. I mean, Canelo's, what, 24? See, 25, I mean, just for Guerrero. Guerrero's 29. But this is a tougher fight. Floyd's going to get what he asked for if this fight does go down. But don't forget, Floyd has he has five more fights to fight in, 29 months, right? I think that's how that goes down. So a lot of these fights are going to start happening quicker before when Floyd would have like that 6 months to a year worth of relaxed time. He's going to have to turn around and have another fight just because of the demand of that contract. And if he's still up to par to fight like that, I think that's a questionable clause that he put together. But it is Money Mayweather. He is unbeaten, and like he said, he basically knows how to figure out the blueprint on beating people at their own games, and I got to give him his credit. As much as I love and respect him, I just don't want to see him in any situation where these guys are fighting for their lives and trying to knock Floyd out, because that's the only way that they're going to beat him, because Floyd initially wins almost every round off of points because he's a skilled, tactical fighter at the end of the day. But unfortunately, I do like the signs of this fight. Now, I have to do this for some people that have been around Sports City for quite some time and been talking junk to me just because I'm a Ranger fan. And we're going to spill into hockey. They've been talking junk to me about their Islanders and how the Islanders are the best team in New York. I say really. Really, the reason why I say that is they go up against the Penguins, and not only did the Penguins shut them out, they basically made them look like they weren't ready to play playoff hockey yet. I think the Penguins are definitely set to steal Game 6 and just do away with the Islanders. Now, the questionable situation is why all of these people are presenting the situation to me, and that is the New York Rangers are going into Washington tonight after tying the series up 2-2 up against the Washington Capitals. Now, I'm really hoping that the Rangers could pull this off on the road, but the way that the Capitals have been playing the Rangers at home, it's been looking tough for the Rangers, man. And the Rangers are in a situation where they need to win at least a game in D.C. so they can actually try and close out in New York on Game 6, which is upcoming, too. If they don't get this in Game 5, their back is up against the wall Game 6, and it is that more or less could feed right into the lap of what the Washington Capitals could do at the end of the day. But I like the situation where the Rangers are. They came out shooting. They were up 2-0 in Game 4. Then you get the Caps to fight their way back. The Rangers get back up and go up and end up winning the Game 4-3, excuse me. And got to give Henrik Lundqvist a great deal of respect and holding his end of the bargain up and going up against some quality shots on the goal from the Washington Capitals. I actually worry about Ovechkin because this guy hasn't really had one of these knockout games, if you will, up against us. It just bothers me a whole lot, but I want to see if this Rangers team could pull this one out on the road. I'd rather get it done here, Game 5, than going into a Game 6 or Game 7 situation and just trying to fend off the situation of being defeated by the Washington Capitals. Even though we are, at the bottom half of the Eastern Conference in the playoff scheme of things, I think that we are kind of evenly matched up against this Washington Capitals team. We got to catch these guys by surprise if we want to win this this series, if you will, to end up advancing to the semis. Now, I want to throw this topic out here because this is something that I'm looking at pretty closely, is the fact with Brandon Roy making the comeback of trying to be a part of the Minnesota Timberwolves. He ends up getting cut out of a short stay with his team, and I wanted to know if this guy still had it in his tank to go further in his career, but unfortunately I think the Wolves don't want anything to do with this. I'm wondering if another team ends up picking him up at the end of the day. It looks like they won't, but does he end up retiring again? Like, unfortunately this guy is a young player. I don't think he's near his 30s, I mean, what else did you say, man? He's fought as hard as he possibly could. It's unfortunate. I wanted to see him out there give it a go. He played this season as much as he could. There was no Kevin Love there as well. I just feel bad for this guy, man. He's every bit of 28 years old. He'll be 29 this summer. But he's actually near his 30s, man. I just don't want to see a guy retire like that early in his career. In his career, his numbers are, you know, 18 points a game. He's a 4 assists, 4 rebounds type of guy. He has big shot capability when given the chance to do so. I really would like to see him be given one more chance to be able to play with the likes of Kevin Love and these guys be at full capacity going into a next season situation. But it hasn't been presented for him. It's very unfortunate. I'm feeling bad for him. Now, another situation that we do have is there was something that we were discussing in the kitchen, I want to say a few days ago, with Kobe Bryant, his situation with his mom actually going out there and selling his stuff to an auction. And he actually had some people on it saying that she had no right to sell his stuff. And this is actually going to the courts, you know, basically with Kobe and his mom. And I wanted to know how the people felt around Sports City, man. I still want to get people's feel. Like, now that this is going legal with him and his mom, I feel very bad in the situation. One, I mean, I want to weigh it on more on his mom's side of the situation where, you know, I don't even feel like there's anything that supports her. You know, she's basically saying that it's in her house and she can sell her son's stuff. But you didn't do the accolade. I mean, you were the mom at the end of the day. Like, I really don't have any stuff to stand on for her. I have more or less stuff to stand on for Kobe Bryant. Like, Kobe said she had no right to sell my stuff. And the money that she's trying to make off of it, she can make way more than what she's trying to get off of it. And I think Kobe knows the situation that's being presented at the end of the day with his mom trying to basically get rid of two different basketballs, one of the All-Star game in 98 and the championship basketball of the first championship he won in 2000 up against the Indiana Pacers. Memorabilia from Lower Marion, the high school he went to in Philadelphia. I mean, I understand where Kobe's coming from because that stuff means a lot to a guy that, you know, where it got him from, you know, being, you know, nobody in the league, a guy off of the bench to basically being one of the best players, if not the best player in the NBA, I mean, barring his Achilles situation. And, you know, people could buy that stuff for millions, and they're ending up trying to sell that for, you know, $450,000. I think that was the ruling at the end of the day. So now they are actually throwing out that the fact that Kobe's been giving his parents millions of dollars, and they're still kind of fending off the situation of not having financial stability, that they had to make this move. I feel terrible for Kobe Bryant. As much as I'm not a fan of Kobe, as much as I go at this guy, whether we're in the kitchen or throwing stuff around in Sports City, a lot of people are more or less Laker fanatics. They don't come to the kitchen any longer because, you know, they basically fell short at the end of the day. But I'm not support. I can't even find a valuable supportive subject to throw towards Kobe's mom, which her name is Pamela Bryant, and the legal situation that she's going through at the end of the day. We ended up getting somebody to shoot into the kitchen. Calling in from the 305, we do have John Miklos in the building. John, welcome to the roundtable. How are you feeling this evening?
Oh, man, we're feeling good. We're feeling good, brother. And to touch on the Kobe Bryant incident, I think if she's truly hurting for money, she should just make a phone call to her incredibly rich son and ask for a couple bucks. She shouldn't have to go ahead and, you know, sell a bunch of his stuff. I think that's just messed up on a parent level.
Yeah, but the situation is that Kobe has actually stated that he has given both of his parents millions of dollars with an S. It wasn't like, I'm hoping that it's more than two. But even if still, if it was $2 million, like, hey, Kobe's making well over that per year. Like,
yeah.
I still can't support her at all. Like if my son, you're getting free millions, like free, because your son has hella game. And your son could go out there and play ball. And you're still somehow financially unstable to go into your basement or the back room and start selling Kobe stuff for $450,000? Really?
Yeah, I mean, the fact that the number is so low is what, compared to what you honestly you should be able to get for the gear. I mean, $450,000, that's toilet paper for Kobe Bean Bryant. You know, I don't understand this move, and I hate the fact that it's become a court matter, because this is something that should have been resolved internally as a family. I don't know. I'm very disappointed in Kobe's mother, the way she's going about this, because you think she would have asked first, because these are Kobe's things. He earned everything she's trying to sell. It's not like, you know, it's his old baseball cards.
Right, and the crazy part about it is his siblings are actually sticking up for him. So, like, her children are actually going up against her, and they're also saying with Kobe's money, the funding that Kobe actually gave his father's actually purchased a house in Las Vegas also earlier this year. So within 5 months, he's also purchased a home in Las Vegas. I'm wondering, it couldn't be a cheap home. You know what I mean? So
you got to think of how
frequent these guys are spending money, and knowing that Kobe is still in the league, and now Kobe's got a situation where he said he's retiring next year. I mean, you better get everything you can out of Kobe in this last year. If not, I mean, his well will run dry unless he starts selling his own memorabilia at the end of the day also.
Yeah, I mean, this is just another classic situation of a parent taking advantage of their child, trying to take advantage of their wealthy, successful, athlete son. I mean, we've seen this happen before with parents, and, you know, it shocks us more that it's happening to a superstar of the sporting world. I think that's really the attention grabber, because if this was somebody, you know, like Kendrick Perkins, it wouldn't even be brought up. But the fact that it's Kobe Bryant, I think, is what drives this issue so hard, is because it just doesn't make any sense why she would do this. I mean, Kobe's obviously proven throughout the years that he's taking care of his family, so why would she do this? Almost, and it's almost spiteful the way she's doing it. Like, she's mad at him for something.
And does she have a right to be mad? Like, how could you try to act and be mad about something that's not yours, and that you should be appreciating and value, like not being so quick to sell it? Like your son is still balling, whether Kobe wants to give you money or not. At the end of the day, I think Kobe would bounce back and be like, you know what? Well, here goes, you know, $3 million, and let's do this, that, and the third, in like a year's time or 2 years' time. Don't just be so fast where Kobe's like, oh, I'm not going to give you this amount of money. Well, Kobe's not going to give me this, and I'm going to sell this and make this money so I'm stable. I just don't see the logic in that. Like, your impatience is actually hurting you at the end of the day. And what if this actually makes Kobe separate from you and not, you know, value your decisions as a mom? I don't want to say, you know, veer away from you as, you know, showing you love or doing this, that, or the third, but, you know, he's going to be very cautious by everything that he does with or for you at the end of the day.
Yep.
Okay, now, there was some topics that I was trying to save for some people that said that they would be here, and I couldn't sit on them. I mean, I wanted to see how a lot of these people felt. Now, you and everybody in the kitchen know that I am a Lions fan, right? And Nick fairly puts out a statement in saying the Lions will be super, and saying that these guys are going to the Super Bowl after this season.
Oh, God.
Right. Your thoughts on the situation. Now, mind you, it's good to be confident. It's good to be confident in, you know, put goals up and try to get goals, you know, step by step. He's only been in the league for 3 years and has already put this notch on his belt to try and go after. And coming off of a season where they're actually still within the realms of being in an 11-game losing streak and at the bottom of their division in the NFC North, and haven't beaten anybody in the division all season long. They haven't beaten the Packers, they haven't beaten the Vikings, and they haven't beaten the Bears at all last season. So you have three teams that you have to showcase your talents up against at the end of the day to make this goal become real. Your thoughts?
Did he learn nothing from Matt Khalil last year, the center for Carolina, who took out a full-page ad and said we're going to the Super Bowl? Do not make that claim if you're a last-place team. You cannot do that. I know Detroit has a ton of talent. I also know Detroit is Detroit. And that play, you know, that season when we made the playoffs, it might as well be a one-hit wonder and a mirage right now. Because for some reason, last year was bad. You know how bad last year was for Detroit? They lost to Arizona. They didn't lose by, like, 3 points. They lost by 38. Okay. That was the Cardinals. They didn't even have a quarterback at the time. I think Adrian Wilson lined up a quarterback. He's a safety. So I think Nick Spiering is also somebody who had a bad reputation in college as a dirty player. If you don't believe me, watch the film from 2010 against Georgia. There's a lot of proof right there. I think he needs to be quiet. The only guy on this team that should be allowed to talk right now is Calvin Johnson. Nobody else on that team should be allowed to talk. Everybody else on that team should be on a gag order. Sue, Stafford, Best, Burleson, all of them need to be on a gag order. None of them have earned the right to speak. Stafford hasn't. Sue definitely has it. Sue needs to go find a corner and sit down and be quiet for a couple years. You know, I mean, the Lions, you want them to win. But at the same time, you just get frustrated with them because they do things like this, and they don't know when to shut up, and they can't. They don't ever put up. I just have no faith at all in Nick Spiering and his statement, and I think it should have never been said. I mean, this has not worked out well. When's the last time somebody said we're going to the Super Bowl and they actually went? The 07 Patriots? I don't even think they said it.
Well. I had the interview in the kitchen. If you go to SportsCityChef.com and check out the interview I had with Jason Pierre-Paul, I had him in the kitchen in August stating that they will go to the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl. And not only did they go to the Super Bowl, they won the Super Bowl. I got that interview here first. So if whenever you got time, you go to SportsCityChef.com, and we did get that interview in August, and it happened. But you're right, when a lot of people publicly state this situation on going to a Super Bowl and they don't end up going to a Super Bowl, I mean, and especially a person of Nick Fairley's caliber, it's kind of like, do people really pay him attention? Do they hold him to it at the end of the season? Just like Matt Khalil, because he ended up getting traded from the Panthers and ended up in Minnesota at the end of the day. So Minnesota had a great season last year. They went to the playoffs, got bumped first round, going up against a stronger Green Bay team. And like I said, the Lions are in a tough division where they have to worry about Green Bay two games a year, worry about the Bears two games a year, where they haven't really got past these guys consistently on a year-by-year basis. I mean, they may win one game here or there. They have to literally sweep these guys to come out and say something. And there was something that you actually hit on where you said, the only person that can say something is Calvin Johnson. Calvin Johnson is one of the more humblest players in the league that will not trash talk to anybody outside the line. But inside the line, you can catch him jawing. I've seen him talking junk in a couple of games. But, you know, on statements like this, I think more or less the situation with Calvin to look at this situation and shake his head. Stafford won't talk junk until they're on the field. He's more of a humble guy, too. I think these guys' nature of being together and kind of rubbing off on them at the end of the day. But then you got these defensive linemen. I mean, that's the knack that these guys have had. Sue has been doing this his entire career and trying to play some very nasty breed of football. And you got Fairley who, you know, if he's playing up to par, he can't be one-on-one blocked. So he's creating havoc. If they can get it going up front, with the likes of, I'm wondering how they're going to start the defensive line. I'm hoping that it goes Sue Fairley, Ansay, and if they can actually get Willie Young, but Willie Young, he's young, just like his last name. He's going to have to turn this around immediately to make it interesting for his defensive front. But also their linebacker course to be there in their secondary, who the NFL loves to pick on, not just the NFC, but every team that throws the ball up against the Detroit Lions have been successful. I mean, you can go to how many different games, whether you're looking at the Titans game where Locker went off, or if you look at the Colts game where the Lions were up a few points and Luck ended up coming back two different possessions and scoring touchdowns and winning that game late at the buzzer, throwing basically a screen play to Avery, and Avery got to the end zone. There's so many defensive lapses that this defense has to step up before the offense starts putting points on the board as well.
Yeah, they really do. The defense has clearly been a weakness for Detroit for a while. I mean, ever since Robert Porcher left, it seemed like this defense lost his identity, and it's been weak. I mean, you look at the defensive line, and you see Fairley and Sue in the middle, and you see guys like Jason Jones, Willie Young, Ansa on the outside, and there's a lot of talent there. You got to see it put together, though. You know, I mean, the secondary has clearly been a weakness, though. And they added a Glover Quinn. So you got Glover Quinn, you got Amari Spivey, John Welding, Louis Delmas. They're all going to fight at that safety position. And the safety position, actually, I think, is a lot deeper than their cornerbacks. And that is the weakness. I mean, when their best cornerback was Eric Wright, and the Bucs, you know, I'm a Bucs fan, so we kind of just stole him from you by overpaying him.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. You didn't steal him. You could have him for $21 million. You guys gave him a four-year, $21 million deal. Good riddance. You could have him.
Yeah. I mean, he was your best corner, though. That's the sad part, is that your best corner came to us, and he's not even our best corner. Before the Revis and drafting of Banks, last year, Wright wasn't our best corner. Tlaib was. We got rid of Tlaib. Wright still wasn't the best corner. You know, he was just kind of there. So, you know, if Detroit had ever, you know, could invest in a good secondary, I think they would be leaps and bounds better, and they'd obviously have a better chance of succeeding against, you know, teams like, well, you know, we saw it against Tennessee and against Indianapolis, Green Bay, where they just kind of just threw it through the air and said, try to stop us. We dare you. If we're running the ball, we're being generous. Because Sue and Fairley can't get pressure on their own. You need the ends, Sue. You need the ends. And with Kyle VandenBosch leaving and Cliff Avril leaving, you need these young guys to step up and make an impact. The Lions are an intriguing team, but they're still the Lions. Let me see you perform back-to-back years before I start being truly impressed. I got burned on them this year, or last year, so I'm not hopping on that bandwagon again.
Yeah, and VandenBosch, I think it was into his run, like as much as havoc he may have caused on the outside. There were so many games where he was just basically stuck in sand, and I'm actually going to miss Cliff the most because Cliff, his pressure on the outside and how many turnovers he created in two seasons ago. He didn't really have that season that he had 2 years ago last year, but I think he was still on the upside of growth within the NFL. He's still within the years of, I think he's 26 or 27, if I'm not mistaken. He can still step up and play some good football. You watch this guy walk out. So you're going to have to see this young talent do well defensively before you look at this offense to put up 27 points a game. I think that's what it's going to take for Detroit to become or have a winning season next season if they can consistently have those type of outputs game after game.
Yeah. I mean, the offense is obviously going to have to carry this team. And, you know, Calvin Johnson's an animal. I've always liked Calvin Johnson. I wish the Bucs would have gotten him, but y'all took him, so we got James Adams. May he rest in peace. And Calvin, though, can't do it himself. Fantastic year last year, amazing year. Definitely warranted the first-round fantasy pick for myself. But the problem is he's probably going to look at double coverage a lot this year, so you're going to need Burleson. You're going to need, you know, Broken Leg Boyles, guys like that, to step up. And they got to help produce, and you got to take the pressure off of Calvin. You know, Tony Scheffler, Brandon Pettigrew, they're still there. You know, they're two good tight ends, receiving tight ends. So Stafford needs to utilize all of his weapons. That's my problem with Stafford, is that he leans on Calvin so much that he kind of ignores the rest of the talent on that team. And they haven't had a 1,000-yard rusher since Kevin Jones in 04. I mean, you know, are they going to start running the ball some now? So Detroit's offense really needs to find a true identity other than number 9 tossing number 81 and praying he scores.
Well, he also tries to throw the ball to Pettigrew, too, but Pettigrew drops the heck out of passes. I don't know how that happens, or he'll end up fumbling, or, you know, the worst thing. So that's why it's like he initially goes to Calvin, because crazier things can happen when Calvin has the ball in his hand, you know. So I think that's the escape route through a lot of the problematic situations that do happen when Detroit's either down or need a touchdown score or need some type of score at the end of the game.
Yeah, Calvin's obviously a stud. He's the best receiver in the game by far. And just his size, his speed, his vert, it's all, the numbers are insane. You know, it's just you need to spread the ball around so that Calvin, you know, he's not completely focused on. Because if you can get the ball to Broyles, then you start dragging attention away from Calvin. There's that 40-yard over the top touchdown to Calvin, and everybody just sitting there going, well, we saw this coming, but what were we going to do? Keep letting them get 10 yards every time?
Right. Exactly. And I'm just wondering, like I call these guys the broke leg receivers, being Ryan Broyles and Nate Burleson. Everybody that comes to the kitchen know I'm not big on Nate Burleson, but he had a great start to the season until he broke his leg. And he broke his leg off of the most freakish play ever. He just jumped up for a pass. Nobody hit him or touched him. He just came down wrong, broke his leg. And Ryan Broyles was injured since college and ended up re-injuring the same knee that was actually hurt throughout college. So they didn't look at trying to get another big-time receiver outside of Fuller, even though I give Fuller some credit. They're going to have to make it get done with what they have in front of them. If not, they're going to be in an uphill battle within the NFC North.
Well, and they still have Mike Thomas, who was a pretty good receiver while he was in Detroit. Mike Thomas was, not in Detroit, Jacksonville. That says something, be a good receiver in Jacksonville where they had no quarterback going on. So I think Mike Thomas is somebody they need to try and work in. Devin Thomas has all the talent. Let's see if they can actually put it together on the field because, you know, he won't be faced, you know, he'll be looking at a lot of one-on-one matchups. There's talent there in the receiving core for Detroit. They just need to find a way to incorporate more. Stafford needs to find a way to get a rhythm with all these guys.
Right. Well, we'll see how this ends up panning out. How I had the topic, I wrote it out as, wow, right now, in the month of May, he makes this statement. But it's good because hopefully, and I'm knocking on wood, that everybody forgets about this by the time July and August comes. Hopefully everybody forgets about it. So if it is to come true, then he can be like, I thought and seen this in the month of May that we could get there. I love my team, but there's stronger teams in the NFC that present a problem to the Lions, let alone they weren't able to score on the 49ers defense like they wanted to, or they're still having problems with Green Bay's defense. I still think there's some teams that are in front of Detroit that'll actually block them from at least making an NFC championship game. Not even to just push them into a Super Bowl. But unfortunately, we are at the tail end of the show. JM, I'm thankful for you stopping by the kitchen and giving me some time at the round table. Give me a plug and a closeout as we get out of the kitchen.
You know, you can find me on Twitter, JEMICKLOS. We've got 4 NHL games tonight, Toronto and Boston. We're about 5 minutes left in the first period. You got New York and Washington, Anaheim, Detroit, St. Louis, LA. And of course, we got two basketball games tonight. Miami and Chicago, San Antonio, Golden State. It's gonna be fun to see how LeBron and Steph Curry can make up for the game too, see if they can keep it going, keep the momentum flowing.
Before you go, who do you like in both games?
Chicago?
Well, I forgot. Okay. And the other game.
San Antonio.
I forgot. Okay.
Yeah, I'll go to Chicago, and I'm going to go with San Antonio tonight. That's just a gut feeling on San Antonio. I think, you know, it's a 50-50 game there, but, you know, if San Antonio wins tonight, Golden State wins game four. So that's a seven-game series. It's going to be great.
Okay, and if Chicago wins tonight, how much do they win by?
Five.
Close game, too. I like that, and I respect the number, too. We'll see. Well, I'll hold you to it. Wait till the next show. Hopefully you're around. We'll throw you back in the kitchen and hold you to that one. SportsCityChefs.com. Check out the website, the interviews, the blogs, and the chefs. I'll be back here Sunday. I don't know how we're going to do the brunch. I think I might have to do the brunch later just due to my co-host saying that we might have to push this back just for Sunday purposes. But at 1 p.m. Sunday, the baseball buffet should be around the kitchen anyway. So we got some food for thought. Y'all can do the dishes. On that note, tell a friend that it's the chefs again. And if they don't know, now they know.
Like finding feathers on a house cat. Let me take y'all somewhere else right now. Looking for a needle in a haystack. A nigga got zoned out with me, man.
Right,
got zoned out with me.
I'm at the center. Zoned out with me.
Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.